Jet Nation Radio. And here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets!
And you are listening to Jet Nation Radio. I am your host, Brandon Dowling, alongside with Joe Blewett. We have a great show for you tonight. There's so much to talk about. There's so many positives. There are negatives as the Jets fall to 1-1 with a loss to the Green Bay Packers. I mean, where to begin? You know, we start off the game. Every Jet fan is sitting in their living room, chest bumping the wall, pumping their fist. The salsa and the dip is all over the place because everybody's going ballistic. You can't believe it. The Jets start off that game better than anybody. I don't think, and not one, if you're going to sit there and tell me that you expected the Jets to start off like that, you're lying to yourself. You're lying to yourself, you're lying to me, you're lying to everybody. Nobody thought the Jets were going to start off the game like that. They start off the game with three touchdown drives, a turnover on the first play. The Jets were flying, okay? Unbelievable start. It shows you, I think Mike Greenberg said it the best about the Jets. It shows you how good this football team can be. And it also shows you, as we saw throughout the game, how bad they can hurt themselves. Because the Jets lost that game against the Packers. I mean, we could talk about the positives to start. Geno Smith looked fantastic in this game. Sure, did he have a couple mistakes, costly mistakes? Absolutely. He played a fantastic game, probably played his best quarter of football as a New York Jet in the beginning of that football game. Moving the ball, the passing game, a touchdown to Decker, unbelievable. You move through the game. I was sitting there, you know, it's fun sometimes to tweet during the game and connect with all the people out on the Jets Twitter base. And you know, I'm sitting there and I'm watching this game, and it's when you're a Jet fan, you have that feeling. You know, it's almost too good to be true. You're kicking the crap out of Green Bay on the road. Your quarterback looks like Joe Montana. Your wide receiver, Jerry Rice. You're in a glory. But again, you're playing Aaron Rodgers. You're playing the Green Bay Packers. No game is out of reach. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, wow, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to get back into this game at some point. Just how much can the Jets hold him off? The Jets shot themselves in the foot. You know how they shot themselves in the foot? They went away from what worked in the beginning of the game. They made stupid mistakes in the end zone. They made stupid mistakes, mental mistakes. Players getting thrown out of the game. I mean, if you're a Jet fan, you have to be excited, and you have to be a little down. Now, again, this is a game that I talked about last week. I picked Green Bay to win this game, as did Joe, as did almost everybody out there. This is a game that the Jets, in my opinion, were expected to lose. Now, could they have won this game? Absolutely. It was a W sitting right there for them. Are you going to sit there and dwell on this loss and say, wow, this could really make or break them? Of course not. It's a road out-of-conference loss against the Green Bay Packers with the best quarterback in the NFL. But it just goes to show you how good the Jets can be if they limit their mistakes and stick to the game plan that works and stop getting too cute. With that being said, the phone lines are open at 646-716-4697. You're listening to Jet Nation Radio. Joe, my man, your thoughts on the game. Bring it.
Yeah, Grant, Brandon, I have to agree with you. I was jumping up and down in the beginning. I was getting to my Packers friend's face, who was at my house watching the game with me. I was excited. At the same time, I knew that there was definitely a chance that the Packers can come back, and we all saw that's exactly what happened. We definitely seen some highs of highs. You know, the offensive line in the first quarter looked good. Geno had time. He was throwing bullet passes. That throw to Decker for the touchdown was probably one of the best throws he's ever thrown in his whole entire
career. Yeah.
Football career. And then I know we're gonna get to it later, but the timeout scandal, that was a great ball to Curley. So we've seen some high of highs, you know, but then we've seen some low of lows. In the second half, the Jets couldn't move the football. The passing game looked weak. Brian Winters looked absolutely terrible that entire game. Chris Johnson, he was running sideways. He was never looking for a hole. He was just trying to sprint for the end zone and find the big hole, but it never worked out for him. So there was definitely some things that I took away from it that were positive, but for this game, I think that there's more negatives. There's more things we have to work on, even though we definitely seen what the Jets are capable of, but we're going to have to wait to see if we can put it together and we can limit the mistakes and you know, beat good teams like the Packers or like the Patriots or like the Broncos in the upcoming games. So it was an exciting game, but we were all a little disappointed, you know.
I mean, of course you're going to be disappointed. I mean, if you're a Jet fan and you want to talk positives and you want to look at it from a glass half full, I said this from the beginning of the year. If the Jets' offense plays well and they look like a team that's competent, they can move the football and make big plays, they will stay in it with every single team that they play. They will not get blown out. They will be in games with big quarterbacks. They will play a solid football game. And, you know, that's what they did. They, to the beginning of the game, they were making plays. They were making big drives. And it's amazing to me because you're looking at it from the point of view, well, you know, the Jets were up by 3 touchdowns and they let it slip away. I look at it as you saw how good this football team can be. Now, again, I got tweeted at by Walter Connolly. I wanted to give him a nice little shout-out here. Was looking forward to how I was going to talk about the Michael Vick situation. How stupid is it that we're sitting here watching a game coming down to the wire, and you're going to bring Michael Vick cold off of the bench twice to line him up as a wide receiver? Nobody even paid attention to that side of the field. If you watch, everybody's like, okay, here's a wasted player out there, means absolutely nothing, he's not going to touch the ball, and if he does, it's going to be for a net gain, a loss of yards. And then you're going to bring Michael Vick in second down to get sacked to put your offense and your quarterback in a poor spot? I mean, again, I want somebody to tell me a team out there that brings two quarterbacks on the field, that runs the stupid Wildcat, that runs a stupid a jet pass with their backup quarterback. Show me those teams that are successful. Show me those teams that win Super Bowls. Do you know what I saw? I saw a team that was built on a great game plan in the beginning of the game of mixing the run and the pass, keeping the opposing defense on their heels, moving the football, you know, almost a dominant type offense. And they went away from it. They started flinging the ball around. Geno Smith, they get the onside kick. Why are you taking a shot to the end zone? Why aren't you handing the ball off, playing conservative, up by that many points, and putting points on the board? It was Marty Morningwig went away from what worked. He got too cute. He panicked too much. He went too much in the air. And again, I just cannot stand the fact that you're bringing in a backup quarterback in a situation like that. Is there any way to justify it at all, Joe, or am I just off base here?
No, I definitely agree with you. Even when we did bring Michael Vick in, it seemed like that was our only good drive in the second half. And, of course, as soon as we get to midfield, we put in Michael Vick, he takes a sack, and then it kills the momentum of the drive, and then we have to punt the ball. And I agree with you that in the first half, it did seem like Morningwig was mixing up the plays. You know, it was pass on first down, you know, run on second, not like the old Brian Schottenheimer and Tony Soprano, just run, pass, or anything like that. But in the second half, it was leaning more towards the bland side. So I don't know where he went, or I don't know what he did, but if we can maintain games like we did in the first quarter and even in the beginning of the second quarter, we can definitely compete with any single team in this league. It's just if we can fix the mistakes like the penalties last week and like the interception this week, which I will talk about later, but there's no way that Sudfield should have just watched the ball get picked off. He definitely had a chance to fight for the ball. And even if he gets a pass interference call and he spears the guy, I don't even care if he spears him, but fight for the ball. He didn't even seem like he wanted to try to get the ball. But yeah, the Michael Vick thing is a joke. I definitely agree with you. It's a joke. It's time to cut it out. And it seems like every time we have momentum, we put Michael Vick in, and then it kills the momentum. So I definitely agree with you. We need to cut it out.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me that we're sitting here and we're watching our quarterback play a great game. You're watching your quarterback move the ball efficiently. You're watching your quarterback grow. I mean, this offense looks light years ahead of where it did a year ago. It truly does. You have weapons. You got, I mean, that option play to Jeremy Curley, that might have been one of the most exciting plays I've seen the Jets make on offense in a long time. I mean,
yeah.
it's amazing. Go ahead, Josh. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, but other than the offense, I was worried a little bit about the defense coming out of the game. You know, in the beginning of the game, it looked like we were getting pressure on Aaron Rodgers. DeMario Davis had two sacks. Yeah, Calvin Pace had a sack, and Coples had a sack. But I don't know if it was just me, Brandon, but did you feel like Aaron Rodgers was just sitting in the pocket, or, you know, he would run out for a little bit? But it seemed like he was standing there for 6 or 7 seconds, just looking around the field, just looking at every option 2 or 3 times. So I think we're definitely going to need to get to more pressure. I don't know what happened to our defensive line that game, but it seemed like they slowed down a lot in the second half. And then to go into this too, since we're talking about the D-line, I'm embarrassed by what Wilkerson did. You know, he's definitely a leader of this team, the leader of the defense. He's a quiet leader, but he's definitely a leader. And to be throwing punches and then after that to be you know, raising his hands, smiling at the crowd, you know, saying like, oh, what, you know, who cares what I did. But he apologized after. But I was definitely disappointed in how the defensive line played and then how Wilkerson acted in whole.
Listen, there is no excuse for how Muhammad Wilkerson acted. But again, I look at it. I was sitting there, and I'm going to get to the timeout stuff a little bit later in the show, probably, you know, towards the middle of the show, because I really want to sound off on that, and I want to make sure I'm at 100. I want to make sure we really touch base on that. But the Muhammad Wilkerson thing, I thought, you know, it's a two-way street, man. It really is. You know, in football, no one has to sit there and tell you it's a tough game. It's you're battling in the trenches. You're battling with guys. I mean, it's almost to the point where you're like, wow, you know, everybody gets so heated, and it's a two-way street. And what I mean that is, Muhammad Wilkerson, no right, you shouldn't be throwing punches at a guy wearing a helmet. That's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my entire life, first off, okay, because it doesn't affect him whatsoever. Second is, the Green Bay Packers were almost just as fault as the Jets in that battle. They were throwing open-hand slaps. They were grabbing them below the belt. I mean, they were antagonizing, and they were throwing open-hand slaps themselves. So you're going to tell me that it's okay for – you're going to throw Wilkerson out of the game, and you're going to give the Jets another 15-yard penalty, but now one person on the Packers gets penalized on that play? That, to me, was a joke. The officiating in this football game, don't get me wrong, the Jets deserved to lose this game. They played too conservative, they went away from the game plan, and the defense looked gassed by the third quarter, end of the half, and even in the beginning of the fourth quarter. They looked gassed. So, I looked at it from this point of view. When it comes to the defensive line and it comes to the officiating, I mean, you're looking at parts of the game. Take out the timeout stuff for a second. How about the pass to Jordy Nelson? The ball skips off the ground. It skips off the ground. And Rex Ryan has to waste a challenge on that play. Eric Decker, his catch in the corner, his catch on the sideline. We're sitting there waiting for 20 minutes. Oh, you know, is it a catch? Is it not a catch? Okay, the Jets got to call a timeout. Well, they called a timeout, so I'm listening to 80,000 people go, oh, it's not a catch, so let me throw the challenge flag. Let's look at it again. I mean, it's just stupidness. You get paid to be an NFL official. You're going to tell me you don't see a ball skip off the ground? And you're going to make a coach waste a challenge?
Yeah, there is definitely some shaky officiating in that game. I agree with you in the end zone, you know, how they didn't get thrown out, especially when somebody ripped Sheldon Richardson's helmet off. But I'm definitely still not going to blame it on that. You know, of course, we're going to get games where we win games because the refs are on our side, just like the New England game last year, which I didn't know was a rule, but when the I forget exactly who it was, Brandon.
At least they honored the rule book there. At least you took a rule that was written by the NFL and you honored it. I mean, it's amazing. You know, let's touch on it now. It was so disappointing to me that I'm watching this game. You're pumped up. You're into the football game. Everybody's into it. The rule states in regards to the timeout, okay? And I believe it was just recently put in too, if I'm not mistaken. The rule states that on the sideline in the National Football League, okay, the only person that is allowed to call a timeout is the head coach. That's it. The players on the field can call timeouts, and the sideline is the head coach. Not the offensive coordinator, not a defensive tackle, the head coach. And the other, the partial part of the rule states is that if the snap is not imminent, usually they will allow the timeout if they think it's the head coach. Meaning if they use their judgment and make a judgment call and they assume that it's Rex Ryan. First off, are you gonna, the, it came out that Sheldon Richardson was the one that whispered into the ref's ear to call a timeout. So one, you're going to tell me Sheldon Richardson it sounds like Rex Ryan. And two, you're going to let an offense coordinator call a timeout in that situation. And three, how is that snap not imminent? Nobody stopped playing. Not one person on that field stopped playing on that play. The NFL completely botched the rule, they botched the play, and then they came out and they had the guts to say that the officials handled it right when they didn't honor a rule that they put in. Why have a rule book? Why have it? It's a joke.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there, but I think I've seen something on ESPN, or I saw something on ESPN the other day that says the ref isn't supposed to turn around to see who's actually calling the timeout. I get that Sheldon Richardson doesn't sound like Rex Ryan at all, but when there's 60,000 fans screaming,
It doesn't matter. You get paid to be a referee. You get paid to be an official in that game. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're going to tell
–
I want somebody to go tell Geno Smith. I want somebody to go tell Geno Smith, hey, Geno, sorry, man. Your game-tying touchdown doesn't count because it's really loud in here, and I didn't have time to turn around and see who called that timeout. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, the thing that made me really mad, too, wasn't even that the timeout was called or who called it, but it was that they blew the whistle after the snap, and then they go back and say that they called the timeout or before and that the play didn't count when, you know, that could have really turned around the game for us. That would have been 30-31, and I hope we could have made the extra point, but we would have tied it. I still think that we deserve to lose it other than that, but that definitely didn't help. It definitely broke my heart, you know. I saw it happen. I stood up. I screamed. I was running through my house. I was pumped. And then I get back in my room and I see that the play didn't count. So it definitely hurt. I didn't like how the refs handled it either. And I'm definitely disappointed in how the sideline should definitely be a place where everybody communicates with Rex Ryan and everything goes to Rex Ryan. So for it to look in shambles like that and not be organized when you're a professional
right in front
team.
Of Rex.
You know?
He's right in front of him. The official's
exactly.
Right next to him. So, I mean, that's the purpose of why the referees are so close to the head coach is partially for one of those types of situations. So, again, your explanation is, well, there's 75,000 people screaming, and I didn't have time to turn around, so I'm going to assume it's the head coach and the snap's not imminent. You're 0 for 3, man. You're 0 for 3.
Yeah.
The snap is imminent. There's no excuse to not turn around and see who's calling timeout. I mean, the officiating in this game was one of the worst officiated games I have ever seen in my entire life. Again, I'll say it again. The Jets deserve to lose this football game. Their mistakes in the end, their lack of execution, and the way they went away from their game plan and the way the defense looked. I get it. But that doesn't take away from the fact that 3 minutes to go in the football game, your quarterback threw a game-tying touchdown on the road in Lambeau Field, and it was taken away because the referee didn't have time to turn around and see who was calling a timeout and assumed it was the head coach because the snap wasn't imminent. That's garbage, man. That's garbage. That makes people not want to watch the game. That's what it does.
It makes
me as a fan not want to watch the game because it's ruined. It's ruined by officials. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, it definitely ticked me off. I definitely wasn't happy about it. But then for people on Twitter to be saying Marty should be fired and that they want him gone and that he doesn't deserve to be here is absolutely ridiculous. Because if you look at how Marty has progressed, Geno compared to Tony Soprano and Brian Schottenheimer, there should be nobody who's mad at Marty. You know, he's been a solid coordinator the year that we've had him, and I'm happy he's here. So I definitely don't want to see him leave, but the Jets should definitely figure out those kind of situations and get more organized before, you know, hopefully we're in the wild card game or we're in a game where we're, you know, 9-6 and we need to win a game. Against a great team like that, you can't beat yourself, and that was definitely beating ourselves. It definitely didn't help that our defense and our secondary was picked on a little bit, but that timeout really hurt, and I know it hurt a lot of Jets fans. So,
well, you're looking at it from this point of view, Joe. I mean, you're sitting there and you're thinking to yourself, you know, if the Jets don't get a pass rush against good quarterbacks, they're going to be in trouble. They don't have the manpower in the secondary to overcome not getting a pass rush. Let's go to Josh, who's been holding. Josh wants to talk about the timeout. Go ahead, Josh.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Fantastic. What's up, Josh? How are you?
Hey, sorry about last week. I have family issues, couldn't hop on the show. Had a lot to say last week, but about this timeout. I normally record the Jets game on the, NFL Network usually play the game again. And I actually watch it. I watch it a couple of times, trying to understand it. And I understand they're using this new technology that all the refs have a headset. And it's bogus. I actually think the Jets was meant to lose the whole time. The reason why, because out of nowhere they came back the way they came back. All the penalties was favored into Green Bay, leading up to the play before that timeout BS, the pass interference that should have been called.
That was a joke, yeah.
But
Josh,
what I'm trying,
truth, man, I'm 100% on board with what you're saying. I was sitting there watching that game, and it's just official blunder after official blunder after official blunder. I mean, you're looking at. Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, sorry to cut you off, but I have to say this for us Jets fans. Mm-hmm. I have to say this, even though it's a mental game, it is. We should be a little bit proud of our Jets because they know they was getting screwed. They did. You could tell they know. Rex Ryan said he got robbed. What you was talking about earlier. Yes, I looked at the replay over and over. I actually saw it. My offensive coordinator, I can't even say his name right. Sorry,
Marty
about
Morningway,
that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. He actually did call timeout. The thing is, Rex Ryan actually had a referee right next to him. Yeah. But if you actually look at the replay, the referee saw Molly call that timeout. Anytime I saw anybody call a timeout in the NFL, the play could be snapped and the ref jump right in the middle and say, wave his arm, say, dead ball, dead ball.
Yep.
This is the first time I didn't see that. It took after the ball was already in the air into his hand. When he scored, the hand supposed to go up, he said no.
Yep.
And that was right after the pass interference that should have been called.
Josh, I don't. You put the nail right on the head, man. I mean, it was a joke. If you watch that play back again, the Jets and the Packers, not one person on that field stopped playing. The defensive line kept playing. The wide receivers in the corner kept playing. Nobody heard a whistle. The announcer went ballistic on TV because he didn't even hear it. He didn't even think it was a dead ball. Not one person did. I mean, it was a joke. I'll say it again. The Jets deserved to lose this football game with the way they played in the second half and the end of the second quarter. I get it. But you still deserve a fighting chance, and the Jets didn't get that chance. And you know what else? You know what really impressed me, Josh? The one thing nobody's talking about, even though the Jets lost that game, and even though the Jets didn't, the Jets didn't score a touchdown on that final drive, after that play, after that timeout, the Jets are facing another fourth down. Geno Smith, after throwing a game-tying touchdown pass that was taken away from him, came out and got the first down in a hostile environment. That's a sign right there to me that guy really has improved, and he's a big-time player. Regardless if he didn't get the touchdown or not, everybody was sitting there waiting for Geno Smith to throw an incomplete pass, and you were just ready to fold your hands and throw him in the air and say, I can't believe the Jets just got screwed. And you know what he did? He didn't pout about it. He didn't whine about it. He came out on the next
play.
He got the first down. That, to me, was exciting.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you too, Brandon. Geno definitely wasn't as accurate as he was in the first game, but in that kind of game last year, Geno would have came out and threw three picks and got a couple sacks and a whole bunch of incompletions. He was only 16 for 32, which isn't great, but he didn't make any big mistakes. I think that pick that he got destroyed on that play, I don't think that should have been a pick. I think that Sudfield should have fought for the ball a little bit more. But I do agree with you that Geno did look good, and I have hope for him. I don't think he's you can necessarily deem him as the starting quarterback for the next 5 or 6 years. I don't think he's a franchise quarterback yet, but I think he's definitely moving towards that. I think that if he can build on what he's been doing the last 2 weeks, that he could definitely be our franchise quarterback.
Well, I have one more. I know you probably have this show to kick on. The one more thing is about what you were talking about with that little fight that broke out that only one Jet player got banned for the game or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at that many times till Green Bay started that. And Richardson, yes, he did swing, but if you actually look at the replay, he didn't swing until a member of the Green Bay Packers rip off his helmet.
Yep.
Why he didn't get pinned on that?
Josh, I'm with you, man. I think it's a joke. I think the way that these officials handled this game, I thought the pass interference plays, the calls down the field were a joke. I thought the challenges that Rex had, the challenge with Jordy Nelson catch was a joke. I thought that the fact that they gave Geno Smith, even corrected plays, I don't care. The Jets shouldn't have to throw a challenge flag and waste a challenge on a play where the ball skips off the ground.
Not just that. Just like I said, the new technology, they say it don't work, right? Where's New York at with that replay? Didn't have that.
Josh, I'm with you, man. The technology's there. There's no excuse to not know who's calling a timeout and not know the rule. The referee's screwed up, but it's because it's the Jets. God forbid anybody announces, and God forbid anybody says, the refs made a mistake.
We're supposed to be the worst team. They want to keep it that way. That's how I feel. Geno, the Jets, like I said, how they end it, how Geno, last thing I'm going to say, by the way, how end it, how Geno actually took that step, how the team didn't falter, how they know they was getting school and keep on getting penalized. Yes, they didn't deserve to win that game. But, yes, they probably know they wasn't going to win that game, but they still fought. And one thing about them, they will, I'm predicting this.
Yeah.
This right there, the next game, you're going to actually see a different Jet because how heated they are, because they know they wanted to win this game that badly.
Yeah, we'll see on Monday night. Hey, Josh, thanks for calling.
All right, go Jets.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Let's go to Zach, who's been holding and wants to talk about the game as a whole. Go ahead, Zach. Thanks for holding.
Yeah, guys. I just wanted to talk about the game that just happened this past week. Honestly, very disappointing with all that happened with the timeout and the controversial touchdown call. You know, even with this team, what it's done, what happened, and I still think this team, showed a lot of people, who weren't really believers for this season, in New York, that this team can still really play football. Their offense, is really putting it together. Geno has really stepped up and really matured over, the past year or two. And I think this team is, nothing to be ashamed of. I mean, obviously it was a tough loss, and they obviously should have had it with that 18 commanding point lead. But, this team really showed, who they really are and how really far they can go. But the thing that really, really got me was, alongside with the controversial is that, they were getting very the cornerback position is still a primary concern, and I just don't know why they can't go after one of these greasy veterans. You don't got to make it pretty, but when you got one of these veteran guys that are on one of these premier wide receivers, especially this week, you have to face possibly a combination of Jeffrey and Marshall, which could be a disaster. But this team is really showing, life, and all they got to really do is, show that they can, play, and that, that they can't give up big passing yards in the passing game.
Oh, yeah, definitely, Zach. I agree with what you're saying. We all saw what the Jets can do in the first quarter, but then we also all saw what they can do in the second half. So I think we have to the Jets have to, you know, come to the game ready, you know, not just, you know, give up when they have the lead. But with the secondary, I do agree with you that we were definitely picked on, and you've seen that, or you saw that Allen was definitely a safety and a linebacker in college. He got beat a couple times in that game, and what really ticked me off was I saw him again against Jordy Nelson not turn around and look for the ball. He just stuck his hand in between Jordy Nelson's arms. So I want to see him progress a little bit more. I don't think that D. Milner should even play in that game. He looked like he was 75%, which I don't want to see that, because I want to see him come back completely healthy. Calvin Pryor, like we're talking about the second, Derek, Calvin Pryor didn't look as good as he did week one, so you saw some of his weaknesses in coverages and how he took an awful angle to Jordy Nelson. So there was definitely some things that were positive. You know, I think that we all saw that Decker looks like a number one receiver. He looks like he could hold down the part for the whole entire year. But something that I want to see that I've been wondering about too is I don't know why Cumberland and Amaro both only had one catch. So I heard all week that the Packers' weakness is you know, they can't cover tight ends. They've been bad against tight ends for the last couple of years. We didn't do anything with our tight ends. And another thing I heard is that they're obviously the first game their rush defense looked awful, and then we can't run the ball on them. So there was definitely some negatives, but I see your positives as well.
Right, and you know that's another good point you brought up. It's, you know, they brought in all these, you know, they got it Amaro with the tight end position, and you know the Rex, you know, they should really use these guys more, you know, because if you don't use them, you're just gonna put more pressure on guys like Decker, Curley, and Nelson, who are, you know, by all means fantastic receivers, but you, at the same time, you know, you still have a team. You can't just rely on, you know, Decker and, you know, those the other guys, because the more pressure you put on them, you know, the more, you know, it's going to really make it tough for them. But, you know, when I look at today with the news that I saw who they worked out today, the fact that I didn't see a cornerback really, really disappoints me. The fact that they couldn't even work out one cornerback, I don't even care which cornerback it is at this point. The fact that they're not even addressing it, that's just, I don't know. I really don't know what to say. Either they're really confident and they think that this game was a fluke, but, you know, like, even just and take a chance on any guy, you know? I even saw today that the guy they picked up, Leon McFadden, signed with the 49ers practice squad. But, you know, they got to somehow address their cornerback situation, which is ideally not so great at the time. But, yeah.
Zach, I've been saying that from the start, man. I've been saying that since the beginning of training camp. Everybody knows how I feel about the cornerback situation. Again, you're looking at it from the fact that they have backup guys playing cornerback. They're trying to progress what they have on the field. But why not bring in other options to see how they can do? It doesn't make any sense to me. There are guys out there. Champ Bailey's still looking for a job. Asante Samuel's still looking for a job. I mean, there are corners out there that, again, are not what they used to be 5 to 6 years ago. But, again, look at what the Jets have out on the field and tell me that bringing in a guy to see if maybe him playing for 6 or 7 games to light a spark at the end of his career to play in a Rex Ryan-type defense might excite him. What's the risk in it? What's the risk? There isn't any. So, Zach,
right.
I'm with you 100%.
Right. You're right. There's no risk, you know. They got to somehow go out. You know, they got to sign someone. I don't care who it is. You know, they got to somehow just, you know, reach out to one of these guys that are out there in the market, you know, and sign them. You know, but I still believe that whatever happens at cornerback, you know, with this front seven and, you know, what's capable of doing, this team can really, really, really go far. You know, I don't think the cornerback position should really hold this team back. The fact
right.
that what they brought in, you know, added, fantastic, you know. People may blame Idzik, oh, he did this. Listen, the fact that he brought in all these pieces, fantastic, but when he forgets a cornerback position, you know, when Revis signs with your Patriots, you know, you got to make some splash. I know you signed Decker. That doesn't fix the problem, though, because you're still, you know, you're missing, there's an empty space at cornerback. You can't just rely on Walls and Langster and Allen. It's because at the end of the day, it's not going to get it done, you know?
Right. Zach, I'm with you 100%, man. I've been saying that from the start. I think that the Jets needed to address it. They didn't do it. You're dealing with fire now. D. Milliner obviously wasn't 100%, and now you're dealing with the aftermath. You played against an elite quarterback, and look what happened. So, Zach, I appreciate the call, my man.
No problem. You got it, guys.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
You got it, boss. Bye.
Always providing an influence. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are going to jump into some picks. We're going to talk about the next game. We're going to move on from this, and we'll look at next week and obviously our Jet Nation Radio Picks of the Week. Back after this. You're listening to Jet Nation Radio.
Since the average attention span is now about 27 seconds thanks to ADD, ADHD, and bad TV, if you're a business of any kind, how do you reach your future clients? You need a marketing partner ready to implement those online strategies and properly target the right audience with the right information using the right media. You need the Strategic Peacock. From mobile to multimedia, the Strategic Peacock will enhance your online presence and help create potential growth. When you're ready to understand how the modern mind works, go to StrategicPeacock.com and develop the right web strategy for you. StrategicPeacock.com.
New music.
Are you an independent artist? Do you struggle with getting music out there without burning a hole in your pocket? The Indie Outbreak is the perfect radio show for you. Broadcasted around the world, heard by thousands of incredible fans, always on demand. You can be too. Interested in being part of the outbreak? Go to IndieOutbreak.com and click the Submit tab for details. Be part of the epidemic sweeping over the world. Indie Outbreak. IndieOutbreak.com.
Amazing.
What seems to be the problem?
I don't know, doctor. I just feel sick.
What have you been listening to recently?
I don't really know. Just whatever's on, I guess.
Seems to me like you have a serious case of bad music.
Am I gonna die? Is it contagious? Is it dangerous?
It can be dangerous. It can cause headaches, earaches, vomiting, nausea, and in extreme cases, even death.
Oh no! What should I do?
I am going to prescribe to you 60 milligrams of Indie Outbreak. It'll help prevent bad music disease and will make your life better and worth living.
Thanks, Doc!
You're listening to Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets!
And we are back off the break here on Jet Nation Radio, and let's go to Glenn, who's been holding. He wants to talk about Decker and Cumberland. Go ahead, Glenn.
Hey, how are we doing tonight, guys?
Pretty good, my man. How are you?
Good, good. Heartbreaker this week. That was a tough one to watch. You know, I know me, Perth, you guys were talking earlier about when they had the big lead and how you feel, and I literally turned to my buddy who I was watching the game with when it was 21-3, and I said, I don't know how to feel right now because this is just too good to be true and something's going to go wrong. And it did. You know, that's a tough win. That's a tough game to win in Green Bay. You know, they just don't lose up there. But a couple things that jumped out to me, one that was really good and one not so good was it looks like Eric Decker, you know, if Geno doesn't miss him on that deep ball, I mean, he would have had a monster day, and he had a really solid week one. We heard about his route running and how precise he was when he got here, and now we're seeing it on the field. I mean, the guy he's definitely a player. He may not be that elite, top five, top ten type guy, but I think all the talk about him being a number two, I think, which honestly I didn't mind because he was still an upgrade over what we had. But he's starting to look like a legitimate number one guy. He's getting open. He's making plays. And like I said, if Geno doesn't make that errant throw, he's 130, 140 yards last week with a couple of touchdowns. So obviously hoping his hamstring heals up. So I'd like to get you guys' thoughts on Decker. And then the other side of the coin is Cumberland, who had a nice week one, not so great week two. And he's a guy that I've been an advocate of his for a couple of years now. You feel like the physical tools are there, and you wonder why isn't it clicking with this guy. I've always said if you put Cumberland with a mid to top tier quarterback, he's a guy who might make a Pro Bowl, because he's got the physical tools, he's got the speed, he played receiver in college, but it just seems like he's so inconsistent. And I don't know if it's an effort thing or a concentration thing, but it's early. He might have a great year, but the fact that he played really well in week one and pretty much disappeared in week two, it's like, what can we expect from this guy? So just curious on your guys' thoughts on Decker and Cumberland.
Yeah, Glenn, I definitely agree with you on Decker. I think that he's showing that he's not just a product of Peyton Manning, and that he could truly be a number one. And like you said, I don't care if he's Denver's number five. He's definitely an upgrade over what we had last year, so I didn't care about that either. So far, he's on pace for 1,000 yards, so he's definitely showing a lot of Jets fans what he can do. About the Cumberland thing, that's something that I actually wrote down too, because where is Cumberland? Where is this fourth-round pick Saunders? I haven't seen him in the offense at all. Where is Amaro? Amaro has, so far, he has 3 receptions for 13 yards through 2 weeks. Cumberland only has 4 receptions for, five receptions for 64 yards. So where is he? I didn't see Amaro at all. It seemed like he was off the field for 90% of the plays. So I agree with you. I needed to see more from the tight ends. That was supposedly the Green Bay Packers' weakness. So where were our tight ends? Where is this second-round draft pick that everybody's saying he's going to get 700, 800 yards? He is, for God's sakes, he has 3 catches for 13 yards through 2 weeks. Where is this guy? Where is Saunders? I haven't seen him. And a guy that I was really high on before the season started is David Nelson. I thought he was going to be a solid number two, not great.
Yes,
not here. He's no Roddy White or anything like that, but I thought he was going to have, 500, 600 yards. And through 2 weeks, he has 2 receptions for 23 yards. So where are all of these guys? I don't see anybody on the offense making great plays other than Decker, and then Chris Johnson, when he's not running sideways, he makes some good plays. And, of course, you have Chris Ivory, who runs the ball hard. But where are all these guys? I don't understand this either, Glenn. So I definitely need to see more from these guys, because, like you said before, Cumberland, it seems like every year everybody's like, oh, look at his potential. He could be great, or definitely a top-tier tight end. But where has he been? It seems like the last 2 off seasons, it's, oh, he has great potential. Look what he's going to do this year. And so far he hasn't showed me anything different from the years past.
And the thing is, he's such a liability in the run game. He can't block at all. That if you're going to have him on the field, if he's not catching the football, then why is he out there? Because he sure isn't blocking anybody. So he's a one-dimensional guy, and you're not even using that dimension that he's got. So that's the front. And again, like I said, it's early. It's week two. He might have a monster season. But I was really surprised to see him disappear. And I think, about halfway through the third quarter, early fourth quarter, when the offense was really sputtering, I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, like, when are we going to hit a tight end? When are we going to, send somebody down the seam and kind of use the whole field? And I felt like, and that was the reason I brought up Decker. I really felt like once he was out with the hamstring, the offense looked completely different. Like, they're going to be heavily reliant on him, because they're a different team without him in there. And that's why I think when he's out, or even that they need to be able to use those tight ends to give the defense to someone else to concentrate on, because if Decker's not in there and you're not throwing a Cumberland or a Morrow, what does that leave you with?
Yeah, exactly. I thought that the other weapons other than Decker were going to be showing a lot more in this game, especially when you hear that the Packers' weakness is covering tight ends, and you figure, like you said, that Decker would draw some attention from guys like Curley or Cumberland or even Nelson. But like I said before, I haven't seen these guys. I'm going to see a lot more in the weeks coming, because if we're not using our weapons, if we're not using Amaro and Cumberland to their full advantages, then we're not going to win. And that's how it's going to be. We can't rely on just Eric Decker, and we can't just rely on Chris Ivory and Chris Johnson. So We're gonna need to use some of these weapons, and hopefully Monday night, you know, we go in there at MetLife Stadium and we see Cumberland have 100 yards and Decker have 100 yards. That's what I would love to see. I don't think it's gonna happen. I think that it's gonna take some time. You know, maybe midway through the season when you see guys like Amaro and Saunders really develop and break out. But as of right now, I'm a little bit disappointed with the offense. I know it looks different than what it was in years past, and it's hard to say that you're disappointed because we've seen some awful offenses the last couple of years. But as of right now, I thought the offense was going to be a little bit more creative. I thought they were going to get Cumberland more involved and Curley more involved. So I definitely agree with you, what you're saying, Glenn. It's definitely a very, very good point.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Hey, Glenn, thank you.
Thanks,
keep
Glenn.
Up the good work on the site, by the way. If you want to check out Glenn, he's been doing interviews. He's all over the place. Check him out
Take
on JetNation.com. He's in the forums and writing articles. Thanks, Glenn.
All right, bye-bye.
So, I mean, yeah, he's on point to something as well, you know, talking about the offensive weapons, where these guys are, who should be moving in, and why aren't we getting production from these type of players. So I think he's onto something. I see where he's coming from. I'm not going to knock the offense. I'm really not. I think Geno Smith and the offense had a great game against the Packers. Sure, was it a tale of two halves? Absolutely. But it comes down to it, why is Geno Smith being taken off the field? Why are they abandoning what works? Why are you putting your quarterback in tough situations? That's what gets me the most. But let's move away from this game. The Jets sit here at 1-1. 99% of us thought the Jets would be 1-1 going into the Monday Night Football game against the Bears. I'll tell you something else, Joe. I was very excited. I'm very excited that the Bears won against the 49ers, because an 0-2 football team coming into MetLife Stadium, they would have been playing like it's their Super Bowl, because if you start 0-3, your season's over. So
yeah.
That was one thing that I was really excited about. But let's move right into it. Again, the football talk does not stop here on Jet Nation Radio. Check out JetNation.com. Go into the forums. Talk football. Tons of new people joining every single day on JetNation.com. Joe, we're going to go into our picks, but, you know, last week you made me eat some crust. So what do you have for us this week?
Yeah, I have to say that last week I went 5-0, or 2 weeks ago I went 5-0, and I made Brandon bow down. And, you know, so I have to say that he went 5-0 this week, and I respect how amazing he is at picking things. But I do want to remind him that we're both 8-2. So we have 14 or 15 more weeks to go. So I think that we're going to have a great competition through all these 15 weeks. I see that my competition knows his stuff now, but I just want to remind him that we're both 8-2, but he did go 5-0 last week. So I have to bow down a little bit.
I think you can stop with the competitive type of answers and everything there. What's the word I'm looking for?
You bring the competitive competitive, Brandon. You're the competitive one.
So let's go right into it. I'm going to start it off right here. Let's pick our first game. Washington goes into Philly. Who wins and why, Joe? Go ahead.
I'm gonna take Philly in that one at home. They showed me last night what they can do with their offense, especially with Darren Sproles. He looked amazing in that game. He's very quick, shifty. Washington, their defense hasn't been great over the last couple of years. I don't think they're going to be able to handle all the weapons that Philly has and the way that they're using Chip Kelly's offense. So I think that Philly will end up winning at home.
I'm going to go with you there. I think that Washington is coming in here a little bruised up. I think Washington is going against the Philly team that's riding high. I'm going to go with the Eagles as well at home. I think the Eagles are onto something special this year, especially in a weak division. Let's go to the next matchup. Baltimore looked good against the Steelers on Thursday Night Football, and the Browns get their first win of the year at home against the Saints. Who do you like and why, Joe? Go ahead.
See, this one was hard for me because the Browns come out week one, they look impressive against the Steelers, and then they come out and get a game-winning field goal against the Saints. So it's going to be hard to pick against them, but I'm going to pick the Ravens just because the Browns are one of those teams, just like the Bills, who start off kind of good and then they just go downhill from there. So I think this is going to be a week where they actually look like the Cleveland Browns. So I'm going to take the Ravens and their high-powered offense with Joe Flacco.
I think you're dead wrong, Joe. I'm going with the dog pound at home. I think they're flying high. They're big win. They start the Mike Petnoff era with their win here. And I think the Browns at home are going to take this game against Baltimore. I think Baltimore came in. They got a long time to rest. They had a long ways away from their last game. I think Cleveland is ready to build off of a win and get a first division win of the year. I'm going with the Browns at home. Next game, San Fran goes into Arizona. We don't know who's going to be quarterbacking for the Cardinals. San Francisco coming off a loss. Arizona's a good football team. They still won on the road on the East Coast despite not having Carson Palmer. Who wins this game and why?
I'm going to go with the 49ers just because last week against the Giants, they both looked pretty awful. And I actually kind of – I'm not trying to diss on Giants fans, but I feel bad for how they lost. Especially against Drew Stanton. So I think I'm not sure who's going to start. I'm not sure if Carson Palmer's going to be back. So for now, I'm definitely taking the 49ers defense against a guy like Drew Stanton. I think Vernon Davis is going to be used a lot and Gore is going to be used a lot. And I just really don't think that the 49ers defense is bad enough to lose to Drew Stanton and the Cardinals.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with San Francisco as well. I think San Francisco is a team that's coming off a bad loss at their first ever game at their new stadium. They're disappointed. They need somebody to take it out on. I think Arizona's sitting at 2-0. They're lucky to be at 2-0. They're not going to start 3-0. I think San Francisco is going to come out strong. They're going to move the football well inside, especially in that dome type field. So I like San Francisco in this game with a big win over Arizona. Our next game, Pittsburgh goes into Carolina. Who do you like and why, Joe?
This one was kind of a pick 'em for me just because I think that both of those teams are both kind of the same tier teams. But I'm going to have to go with the home team. I'm going to go with the Panthers just because the
record. Stop looking at my sheet, please.
Yeah, okay. But their weapons have surprised me so far with Avant and Kotchery and Kelvin Benjamin, who I honestly wasn't too high on coming out of the draft. I can admit my mistakes. I thought he was going to be a bust. But from what I'm seeing right now, he looks like he's doing pretty good. He's on SportsCenter top 10 plays every Sunday. So he looks like he's fitting in well there. Their defense is obviously pretty great there. They've lost some secondary players, but their defense up front is pretty amazing. So I'm going to go with the Panthers at home. What about you, Brandon?
I'm going with the Panthers too, man. I think Carolina coming off a big win against the Lions team that was coming in hot off Monday Night Football. I like the Panthers. I like their team. I like what they stand for. I like what they're built. You know, the way that they move the football and the way they play defense. I really like the way Carolina is playing football as of, you know, obviously this past week when they're getting their starting quarterback back. So I'm going to go with the Panthers as well. So it looks like me and Joe are both going with Philadelphia. I'm going with the Brownies. Joe's going with the Ravens. We're both going with San Francisco and both going with the Panthers. So our pick'em game, our pickup game is going to be the Cleveland and Baltimore. We'll see who wins that game. Again, you can pick against us on the forums at JetNation.com. It's Jet Nation Radio Picks of the Week. When we come back, we're going to pick the big game, Jets, Bears, Monday Night Football. Who wins and why? I think you're going to like our predictions. Back after this. You're listening to Jet Nation Radio.
Are you a business trying to get the word out about your goods? Or an organization seeking to make the world a better place? Or a band promoting a new tour or debut EP? How do you keep up with the ever-evolving world of social media? Craft your message and make sure it gets to the right people. The answer is the Strategic Peacock. The Strategic Peacock takes pride in helping organizations create and implement online strategies that appropriately target the right audience with the right information using the right media. From mobile to multimedia, the Strategic Peacock will enhance your online presence. Visit strategicpeacock.com to develop the right web strategies for success.
Hi, I'm Allie, and I'm here to talk about a serious problem. Your children are listening to bad music. They go home, turn on the radio, and get down with their bad selves. You think it's harmless. You think it's just them being a teenager. You're wrong. Nothing is as harmful or addictive as bad music. Soon your kids will start thinking bad music is good, and the world will be filled with only bad music. So talk to your children about the dangers of bad music and tell them about the cure, Indie Outbreak. Indie Outbreak features a huge selection of great indie artists fighting against the bad music plague. Good music to save their minds. Join with us at IndieOutbreak.com, and together we can help stop the spread of bad music.
New music.
Are you an independent artist? Do you struggle with getting your music out there without burning a hole in your pocket? Then the Indie Outbreak is the perfect radio show for you. Broadcasted around the world, heard by thousands of incredible fans, always on demand. You can be too. Interested in being part of the outbreak? Go to IndieOutbreak.com and click the Submit tab for details. Be part of the epidemic sweeping over the world. Indie Outbreak. IndieOutbreak.com.
Amazing.
Jet Nation Radio, and here are your hosts, Joe Blewett and Brandon Dowling.
And the home of the Jets!
All right, it's that time again, Jet fans. I know it's Tuesday, and we still got about, we got 6 days until the next Jets football game, but we're going to pick it. We're going to pick the Jets game and why the Jets come in 1-1 at home on Monday Night Football against the Chicago Bears, coming off a heartbreaking and disappointing loss against the Packers. The Jets thought they had the game in their grasp and watched it slip away towards the end. Joe, Jets, Bears, Monday Night Football. Who wins and why?
It would definitely be hard to pick against the Jets 2 weeks in a row, but I'm gonna have to say the Jets this week with a final score of 27-20. I think that the Jets are gonna come out on fire. I think the fans are gonna come out on fire on Monday night. All the fans are gonna be loud. The Jets are gonna be pumped up. They're not happy about what happened that last week's game against the Packers. Supposedly the whole entire ride home, nobody talked on the Jets. They're just very silent, and everybody's just very mad. So I think the Jets come out and win. I think that we're going to have to do a lot of the same things we did last week. I think that the Jets are going to have to run the ball efficiently, not like last week where it was Chris Johnson trying to run for big holes and things like that. I think that we're going to have to run the ball very efficiently, 4 yards, 5 yards a pop. I think that we're going to have to sustain long drives, those 6-7 minute drives, to keep Jay Cutler and the Bears off the field. We have to minimize the penalties. We didn't have too many last week like we did against the Raiders, but we still had a couple drive-killing penalties, so we need to minimize those. I think that Brian Winters is really going to have to step up because this is the best defense that we've seen so far or saw so far. They're not a great defense, but they're a pretty solid defense, so our line doesn't have to be efficient in this game as well. Another thing is, too, we're going to have to force some turnovers. We got lucky with the turnover against the Packers last week that the Aaron Rodgers botched the snap, but we're going to have to force Jay Cutler into some turnovers. He's very prone to doing that. He'll throw up a ball or two a game that's very easily picked because he's not as efficient of a quarterback, so I think we're going to need to do some disguises and some zone disguises where we put two safeties over the top. We definitely have to limit Jeffries and Marshalls. There's no way we're going to shut them down. We're going to see if Jeffries can even play this week. He's been battling some injuries, but we're going to have to slow them down. Hopefully Marshall doesn't have 3 touchdowns against us like he did last week because we're not going to win that way. And a little wrinkle at the end, this is for you, though. We need to see no Michael Vick on the field. We're going to need I don't want to see us or the Jets drive 70 yards, be on the 30-yard line, and then put Michael Vick in for a gimmick play, lose a couple of yards, kill the drive. And then, even if it forces just a field goal over a touchdown and that difference is that 4 points, I'm going to be pissed. So I really don't want to see Michael Vick on the field. I want to see him sitting on the sideline holding the playbook and studying. I don't want to see him on the field. But go ahead, Brandon. What about you?
All right, so Joe, let's. You're going with the, of course.
Yeah,
whenever you pick the Jets, you get to hear the play button. So I am right on with you, Joe. I am going with the Jets in this football game. I thought that all along, I thought the Jets start the season 2-1. I saw them beating Oakland, losing to Green Bay, and beating the Bears on Monday Night Football. I think the Chicago Bears played their best football game in the second half and the end of that game against the Niners that they could possibly play. Jay Cutler was throwing touchdown passes. Their defense was so effective. I think the Bears played for their life on Sunday night, not to start 0-2. It showed, and now they're coming out, and they're going to play. I don't even know if you would call it a letdown game. I think that the Bears kind of, they hit how good they could possibly be against the dominant Niners team. I think Tillman being out is a huge, huge effect on this game, and obviously for the Bears for the season. I think both Jeffries and Marshall are banged up. Rex is going to have a good game plan for them. And I think Geno Smith and the Jets are going to come out in a great home environment, and I think they're going to build off their offensive success. They know it works. They know what gets the job done. I think the Jets come out this week. I see them putting up 24 points, and I see the Bears putting up 20. So I like a 24-20 victory for the Jets. I think every Jets win is going to be close just by the way that they play, but this is going to be a type of game where it's going to be a 24-14 type battle, and the Jets let, you know, a kind of a cheap touchdown in at the end of the game. They have to get turnovers. Jay Cutler is a guy who throws the ball up for grabs. He puts the ball into tight windows where sometimes there's nothing there. If there's any type of game the Jets are going to get some picks and get some takeaways, this is the game to get it. You're at home, Monday Night Football. The Bears are coming off a big win. They know what they're capable of. They showed it last week. Can they repeat it 2 weeks in a row? I don't think so. I think the Jets know they're better than how they finished the game last week. I think Muhammad Wilkerson wants to give the fans kind of an apology by putting it out on the field. I like the Jets 24-20. I think they come out and beat the Bears on Monday Night Football, and they take it, and they move to 2-1. Again, the football talk does not stop here. You can talk on JetNation.com. You can check us out in the forums. You can check out our picks at Jet Nation Radio Picks of the Week. We would love to hear from you. And, of course, remember, we are here every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, and we will see you next week. Thank you for tuning in to Jet Nation Radio. And remember, you can hear us live every Tuesday at 8 o'clock Eastern Time right here on Jet Nation Radio.